We started discussing Havdalah last week. We're going to spend, we have this Sunday, we're going to talk a little bit more Havdalah next week as well. And then the week after that, we might switch over to Pesach, just to do like a big crash on Pesach about my favorite class ever is why it should take you a lot less time than you spend cleaning. So that's my favorite class. Usually goes over well. So we'll spend some time on that together, then probably just take a little bit of time off so people could use their Sundays. I imagine many of you are using your Sundays quite intensely to get ready for Pesach. So we'll probably have, again, maybe three more classes. Probably the 27th will probably be the last class, okay? Until after Pesach, and then we'll get started with the new topic. So today, let's jump in with some of the customs and some of the halachos that revolve around Havdalah. We'll begin with a question for all of you. Who here spills wine or grape juice as they pour during Havdalah at some point? At some points? Okay, fantastic. Now, I'm talking about purposely, not because our hands are shaking, okay? So some don't. I think we ran out of source sheets. I'm sorry. People are sharing. Okay. So there are different customs about when to do so, and we're going to get into the rationale behind the why we spill in general, a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful explanation, as well as a question of, when do we actually spill? Now, there are some who deliberately do not spill. Why do they not spill? The argument is that perhaps this is an issue of what we call bal tashchis, wasting. We're told we're not supposed to waste food items, not forget food. We're not supposed to waste anything. We're supposed to be sensitive to the gifts that we have, and therefore is spilling extra wine or grape juice, is that considered wasteful? And so it's not the time and place to get into a whole discussion of bal tashchis, but there is an extensive discussion among the poskim about what constitutes bal tashchis. And according to many, as long as it serves a purpose, that's not waste. In other words, if I'm using it to make me feel better just by having something over here, you know, and I'm not eating it, I'm not using it for anything other than makes me feel good because I look at it or something. I don't know. I'm coming up with a bit of not the best example, but I'm not using it for any purpose and it's going to end up being wasted. It's not going to be used. I'm just going to be staring at it. It makes me feel good to look at this apple on my desk. Okay, that's my example. And eventually it's going to rot and no one's going to eat it. Is that waste? And according to many, no. Waste is when I'm doing nothing with it. When I'm basically taking a good apple and just throwing it in the garbage. That's waste. But if it has a function, if it's doing something, then that's not called waste. It has a purpose, right? So as long as it has some purpose, it's okay. And therefore, many argue that there is no concept of waste over here in the context that we'll have to get into why do we have this minhag of spilling extra wine when we make Havdalah. But the notion that it's wasteful, most push back and say that's not waste because there is some minhag, it's based on something which we'll get into, and therefore it's not called wasteful. Okay, so that's going to be one of the primary things we'll be focusing on. And the other thing is what you're able to make Havdalah on. Okay, those are the two things we want to focus on today. Next week, we're going to wrap up all the other laws of Havdalah, as well as the unique obligation, or non-obligation, according to some, we'll see, of women as it pertains to Havdalah. So Havdalah is very unique, and there's a very, very interesting discussion, complicated discussion about what exactly is the obligation for women to say Havdalah. So stay tuned. That's not till next week. Yes?
When you say overflow the cup, are you talking about just filling the cup that a little pours out, or are you talking about the
good. So I'm deliberately being vague, and we'll see. There are different customs. We'll see how they evolved. Okay. So let's begin. The first page you have in front of you is from Reish Tzadi Vav, the 296th chapter of Or HaChaim of the Shulchan Aruch, and let's begin. So Seder Havdalah says the Shulchan Aruch under the heading and by the Aleph Seder Havdalah, the order of Havdalah, Yayin Besamim Ner Havdalah. First, you make the blessing on the wine. Then you make the blessing on the besamim, on the smelling items, ner, on the candle, and then Havdalah, you make the final blessing, which speaks to this notion that we separate between holy and mundane, between Shabbos and the weekday. V'simanach, and if you want a hint to remember the order, Yavne. The acronym is Yavne, like the city Yavne, and that stands for Yayin, Besamim, Ner, Havdalah, Yavne. Okay. V'tzarech lizaher, you have to be careful, shelo yehe hakos pagum. You have to be careful that the cup is not literally, like pagum means, kind of like blemished. Now, what does that mean? There is a halacha that when making kiddush or havdalah or any ceremonial blessing over a cup of wine, it has to be a cup that no one drank from. Not that no one drank from ever. Doesn't mean you have to clean it out so well, but it means if you had a cup of wine or a cup of grape juice and someone took a sip and then you go, oh, I want to make kiddush now or I want to make avdala from it, and someone drank from that, even they took just a tiny bit, it would be, it's considered like a little bit disgraceful. And therefore, we don't make a bracha. Not you're allowed to make a regular bracha, but a ceremonial bracha, meaning the brachos for a wedding, the brachos of Abdallah, brachos of Kiddush. You wouldn't make it on a cup that is pagum. Okay, that's a halacha. It's interesting that he specifically says it over here. It would be true for Kiddush. It's true all the time. Perhaps the reason he says it over here is because the fact that sometimes Havdalah, the perhaps you were eating, you know, having Shalosh Shudas not too long earlier, and you had a cup of wine sitting there. You know, usually Kiddush is at the beginning of the meal, right? So therefore, the beginning of the meal, well, it's what kicks off the meal. Havdalah is not at the end of a meal, but perhaps right after a meal, and therefore there's more of a concern. I wonder if that's, you know, that maybe that's why he's emphasizing it over here. There's more of a concern that someone drank from that cup, and therefore you have to make sure that it's not a cup that someone drank from. If someone did drink from the cup, you kind of refill the cup, and then it becomes unpugumed. That's not a word, but yes.
So it's not an issue of making two brachas on the same one?
There might be that issue. That would probably not be, assuming you benched already before Havdalah, that would not be an issue. Okay. Meaning the fact that it's on the same cup wouldn't matter. The fact that you stopped the meal could be the same cup. Okay. Says the Rama, okay, this is the finer print. Vinagu Lomar, he quotes the custom, it's customary to say Kodam Havdalah Shosum Bais before the Havdalah that is said at home. Okay, we don't say what he's about to say when we say Havdalah in Shul, but at the Havdalah that's said at home, what do we say? We say Hine Kel Yeshuasi, a bunch of verses from Yeshaya, from Isaiah, Kos Yeshuas Esa, we lift up our cup, La Yehudim Haisa Ora, a pasuk from the Megillah that the Jews had light, all these psukim, L'simen Tov, they're all like these positive, uplifting psukim. It's a good sign. Okay, it doesn't really elaborate. I actually have not found any more depth in terms of why these particular, there are many uplifting verses. I don't know, and I haven't seen yet, why we say these specific verses. Again, all of them are beautiful, but I don't know. We have a pretty rich liturgy. But fine, these are the verses we say. It's customary we say these verses. All the verses we say before Havdalah, all that. But it's important to note, all of that is secondary, meaning that is the minhag. The halacha, the obligation, is to say the blessings, you know, a gefen, Besamim, Yayin, and Havdalah, that's the obligation. The psukim before, again, it's part of our custom, but if you, you know, I don't know, you're by yourself, you don't have a sitter, and you forgot those verses, don't even think twice. That's completely secondary to Havdalah. It's a beautiful custom. We do it. Don't stop doing it, but it's not the mandatory part of it. Okay, fine. Vinoagin, and here, Uvishas Havdalah, while we say Havdalah, Yitnu Einehem Bakos Uvaner. You should place your eyes to the cup and to the candle. Why do you do so? Why do you do so? So the commentators explain the reason we do so is to be able to focus. You know, we get distracted easily, so it's important we have like a focal point. You know, this comes up a couple of times in halacha where there's a concern that you're going to be distracted, and so if you have an item over there, the poskim say, focus on that item. You know, for Birkas Kohanim, we actually have the opposite, just to confuse you. For Birkas Kohanim, you know, the real reason that men, some men cover their heads with their talis is so that they don't get distracted. They don't want to look anywhere. It's not that we're going to get blinded or whatever. You know, there's something to that. But the point is that the real, the cut and dry reason that people cover their heads is that by blocking our eyes, we're not going to get distracted. We can focus on the blessings. So there's this constant sensitivity about making sure that we're paying attention. So how do you pay attention? Especially Havdalah. I don't know. People's minds are already where we're going. What are we doing? I don't know. And therefore, you know, focus on the cup, focus on the candle, something that's going to capture your attention as a way of paying attention. Okay, fine. Vinoagin, and we have a minag. Lishboch mikos shel yayin ala aretz, to pour from the cup of wine onto the ground or onto your plates. Kodem shesiyein borei pri agafen, before you finish the blessing of borei pri agafen, kidei shelo yeh hakos pagum, so that the cup is not pagum. Okay, now what in the world is he saying? Okay, so he says two things which are a little bit hard to understand. First of all, he says, when do you pour the cup from the cup? He says, you pour it before you finish the blessing of borei pri agafen. Okay, does anyone do that? Pour it from in the middle of saying the borei pri agafen? I've never seen anyone do it. But that's what the Rama says, that the time to pour is not when you fill up, is not after. He says you should spill a little bit in the middle of your bracha borei pri agafen. Why? And he explains the reason why is that the cup will not be pagum. What does it mean the cup will not be pagum? So it seems like the Rama is understanding like this. Actually, let's read one more line, then I'll explain. Damrina, because, and this is a quote from the Gemara. Damrina, the Gemara says, Kol bayis any house, shelo nishbach bo yayin kamayim, in which wine doesn't spill like water, ain bo simin bracha. There's no blessing in that house. We'll have to explain what that means. But any house, let's just repeat it, and we'll explain what it means soon. But the Gemara says you should spill during Havdalah. Why? Because any house in which wine doesn't spill like water, no blessing in that house. Seems pretty bizarre. Well, let's let that sink in. We'll see some explanations in a moment. The osin kein l'simin tov b'tchilas ha'shavua, and we do so as a good sign in the beginning of the week. So again, the Ramaz under, so the Gemara tells us to spill. When to spill doesn't tell us when. The Rama suggests, or Moshe Isserles, suggests that the time to spill is in the midst of the bracha of Hagefen. Why? And this is the words that need unpacking. He says the reason we spill then is so that we will not say a bracha on a cup that is pagum. That the cup is not pagum, is not blemished. Now, what is he talking about? A moment ago, I told you pagum meant people drink from it, right? So it seems like the Rama has a broader understanding of what pagum actually means. It seems like, according to him, pagum does not only mean that it's blemished, that it's impacted. Blemish is not the best word. It's probably a better word.
Lacking.
Yeah. Some form of lack. But some form of like a negative connotation. In some way ruined by a diminishment. Yeah. So the basic idea of pagum is that someone drank from it and that invalidates it from being used as a cup of for a ceremonial bracha, okay? The Rama seems to understand that it's broader than that. It's not only when people drink from it, but anytime it's spilled, you spill out, it also is considered pagum. That's what the Rama seems to understand. So now the Rama is faced with a challenge. Because on the one hand, the Gemara says that you need to spill the wine, right? On the other hand, he says if you spill the wine, then it becomes like it's pagum. It's like it's basically like less than. It's ruined, right? So how do you reconcile the two? So basically his theory is like this. This is a little complicated. I'll repeat this after I say this once, okay? So basically it's like this. To say the bracha, to go ahead and spill out wine before making the bracha, then according to him, spilling wine is called pagum. So if I spill it out before the bracha, then what's going to be the problem? Then I can't say a bracha on something which is pagum. Fine, that option's out. So I can't spill it before saying the bracha. X, okay? If I spill it after I say the bracha, it seems like he's understanding, and this is the way others understand him, that it's like disgraceful. I said a bracha, and then I go, I spill it out before I drink from it. That seems like I'm not, like, I just said a blessing on it, I just said something special on it, and then I'm going to go spill it out. That seems to be disgraceful to the whole process over here. And therefore, he says, what you should do is start the bracha with a full cup, spill it in the middle, so you said the bracha on a full cup. You spill it in the middle before the bracha is over. Then when the bracha is over, you don't spill it anymore so that you say you drink from the cup that you spilled, but you didn't spill any more after you finished saying the bracha. You with me? Let's say it one more time, okay? So again, there's a certain tension over here. It's complicated, I know. There's a certain tension over here. On the one hand, we have this notion of the cup has to be complete. The Rama has an expansive understanding of what complete means. Not only is it impacted if someone drinks from it, but it's impacted also if someone spills it out, okay? At the same time, the Gemara says you're supposed to spill the wine. So he's stuck, okay? So then let's think out when we should spill. If we spill before, then I'm saying a bracha on a cup that is pagum. Cannot do so. If I spill after I say the bracha, it's disgraceful. And therefore he says, spill it in the middle. Yes? That is a very good question. You're in very good company. No one has a good answer. But that's his understanding. I don't know. We'll see in a moment. The Taz, one of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch Ramah, what are you talking about? This doesn't say it anywhere. Yeah. Okay. Any thoughts, questions?
When was the middle?
Somewhere in the middle. You have a couple of words. Yeah, somewhere between Baruch and Hagefen. He doesn't get into more detail than that. Yes?
Yeah, but we don't do that. We do it at the end, right?
Well, the different costumes. So then we'll see. We'll see. Now we're going to confuse everyone. Okay. Yeah, it's unique, but again, there's this tension. I want to have a full cup, and I also want to have a spilled cup. So how do I merge the two together, right? It's a unique tension because it's the only time that we have this notion that you're supposed to be spilling something for some reason.
So the other thing is if you overflow it.
So is that called spill? So the question is that called spilling? Right? That's a fair question. Is that called spilling? Well, I think when we get a bit of a better understanding as to why, or at least one theory as to why, that might shed a little bit of light on the Ramah. But yes.
So in Texas, mm-hmm. we take wine out of our cup,
yeah,
and spill it,
mm-hmm.
before we make the bracha, and it's not
So some Haggadahs and some suggest, and this is an excellent point, right? Some just spill it and that's cool. As long as there's still a revius, as long as there's still the requisite measurement in there, totally fine. But others actually suggest you're supposed to refill it after spilling it out based on this. Exactly, right? So whether it's your pinky, however much you spill, it's not a matter of how much you spill, right? But that is exactly that. There are those who don't refill. Maybe some of you don't refill, and some of you do, based on this Rama, who says that pagum is going to not just be when I drink from it, but also when anything gets poured out. That's an excellent connection. Yes?
The language of the Gemara for spill, is it you spill or the wine spills?
Excellent point. Good. Nishpach means what? Any house which wine does not... Nishpach means it spilled. It spilled, not that you pour it.
So it could be overflowing.
It could be. But let's come back to that terminology. So let's keep that textual piece in mind. Let's skip to the third page. Okay, we're going to jump over the Shulchan Aruch. You look at, it says 52 on the bottom of the page. It's a long section from, not the other side, but then, yeah, the next page in front of you. Sorry? Yeah.
Rashi script,
yeah. The problem. Yeah. Okay. Simon Rish. Okay, like that. Kodem Shisayim Bar Priya Gafen. Okay, so let's see what he says. So this is the Taz. The Taz Turei Zahav, one of the commentators on the Shulchan Aruch. He says like this. So he says, we'll just start from the underlined words. He says, Ve'ein tam lezeh. He's building off of the Ramah. He says there's no explanation for this. Dim tachshov zeh lepagum. He says, if you do indeed consider pouring out wine as a form of pigima, as a form of ruining the cup, he says, Hagam sofa bracha, tzarech lios akos shena pagum. So what have you accomplished? Let's say you're right that pouring out wine is considered pagum. So fine, you don't want to say a bracha on a cup that's pagum, and that's why you say you keep it complete. I say Baruch Ata Hashem, Lakina Malchadam, and then I continue Bar Pirgafen. But the sof bracha, the end of the bracha, is still on a cup that's pagum. When we say this notion, we're supposed to say a bracha on a cup that's not pagum. Who says the first word, the second word, to Karen's point before? No, you got to say the whole bracha on a cup that's not pagum. So what did you accomplish? But then he says, Vesukash, let's skip to the next underline. Vesukash, the second question is where you were asking, Shelley, ha'ein sheikh pagum, elim kain shosim imenu. The notion of where do you get this? The whole cup, pagum means it is ruined in a very specific way, that someone drank from it. If you spill from it, says the Taz, that's not pagum. That's not pagum. There is nowhere, no source that he's aware of that says pagum is when you spill. Okay? Obviously the Rama disagrees, but he's saying, I don't know where you're getting this from. Okay? So what does he say? So he suggests the following. If you skip down to the next underline, which is in the second paragraph, and this is what many of you do. Shebisha shememalin hakos shel bracha lehavdala. When you fill the cup up for havdala, okay? Yimalenu al kol gidosav. Fill it up over its sides. Okay, fill it up. Allow it to spill over that way. Va'acher kach lo yishboch klum. And afterwards, don't spill anything at all. V'zeo nachon me'od. And that is very good. That's very appropriate. So what the Taz is suggesting, a different approach. The don't spill in the middle of the bracha, all that he disregards, he throws it out entirely for two questions. One, if there really is an issue of pigima, if there really is an issue of it being blemished or being ruined, then before the bracha, middle of the bracha, still you're saying a bracha, at least it's some part of the bracha, is being said on a cup that's incomplete. That doesn't make sense. Second of all, where are you getting this idea? Pagum, pagum means that someone drank from it. That's what we have to avoid. Okay, if you have little kids, once in a while, like one of my kids will just like come and be like, ah, grape juice, and start drinking, I'm like, you know, okay, fine, that could happen, even if it's just a sip, you'd have to refill it at that point, okay, but pagum, that someone spilled it, that's not pagum. So therefore, says the Taz, you know what you should do if you want to fulfill this idea of spilling some wine, spilling some grape juice, just fill it in a way that it overflows, and you're good to go. Now, he's now going to explain what is the source or what is the rationale behind this? The source is a Gemara. But what's it all about? What does it mean? A house in which wine didn't spill like water, that's when you're going to see Simon Bracha. So what does it mean? He says a beautiful idea. He says, Diyesh Lahakshos, you should ask. Lama Amar, the third paragraph now, excuse me. Diyesh Lahakshos, we should ask on the terminology used in the Gemara. Lama Amar Lashon Diyeved, Dainu Nishbach. Why is the terminology used as if it happened? Diyavad, that means it happened already, that it spilled. The Lo Amar, it doesn't say, Kol Bayish Ein Shovchin Bo. Any house in which you don't go ahead and spill. In other words, there are two ways of saying this. We could have said, you should spill wine like water. That's a Simen Bracha. Instead it says, any house in which wine didn't spill like already, like water, that's a house with no Bracha. What does that mean? Ella, he says like this, Diskavnu Lomar. They intend to say as follows, Shelo Yisrages Adam Beveso, that a person should not get angry in their house, Afilu Im Yera Lo Hezek, even if there is some damage. Dahainu, for example, Shekvar Nishbach Yayim Beshogeg, Ayedei Shum Echem Nehabayis, that someone in the household spilled some wine, okay? Vidarkon Shbnei Adam Lisrages Bishvil Zeh, and it's normal, it's wine, it's expensive, whatever it is. Well, people get upset. What are you doing? What's going on over here? Alkein Amar, therefore the Gemara says, Kol bayis she'ein hayayin nishbach bishogeg, nechshav lo ki'ilu hayamayim. Any house in which wine that's spilled by mistake is not considered like water spilled, which is like nothing. Ela adram misrages, instead the person gets angry. They don't treat it like water. They get angry. Az ein bo simin bracha, there'll be no bracha in such a house. Okay, and then he goes and he quotes a verse. So basically what he says, I think it's such a beautiful idea. He says that the reason we're spilling wine we're overflowing the wine in the beginning of the week is we're trying to make, it's symbolic. And we're trying to say is we're reminding ourselves, you know, the coming week, there are going to be spills. There are going to be mistakes. People are going to break things. People are going to perhaps hurt us a little bit unintentionally. There's going to be mistakes. There are going to be things that spill, things that fall over. Right? And so, kol bayis she'ein yayin nishbach kamo mayim. Any house in which we're not able to reframe and say, it's not a big deal. Wine, water, whatever. Yeah, you broke my beautiful vase. You did something. Fine, I'm able to forgive. I'm able to forgo. I'm able to move on. That's a house that has blessing. And so we begin the week with doing this symbolic act where we're able to say, it's okay. Even though a mistake happened, even though something expensive was wasted, it's okay. That's a beautiful idea. Yes?
It is beautiful.
Well, yeah, I think the arguments would be that no, since you're doing it, there's ain lecha, you know, a usage
it's
better.
Bal Pashlit for a good reason, but it's still Bal Pashlit that you're doing, because if you weren't doing Bal Pashlit, then it wouldn't be that simple.
Understood. Yes. Okay. And therefore, makes it not Bal Pashlit. Right. Fair. Yeah. So it's wasted, and therefore, but because you're doing it for a positive purpose, it's not wasted. So yeah. So. Excellent. So bottom line is two things from the Taz. One, he said he rejects this idea of the Ramah to spill in the middle. He says makes no sense. A, it's not Pagum. B, doing in the middle. If it is Pagum, doing in the middle doesn't really help you. And then he suggests this beautiful idea. The reason behind the spilling is we're trying to, it's like almost like we're deliberately breaking something. We're deliberately doing something that would otherwise cause some frustration. And we're saying, and I'm chilled. I'm cool. I got this. And to be able to start our week with that sense of I'm not going to be angry. I'm going to be calm. Beautiful. Okay, that is the Taz. And that is, let's go back to the first page and let's see what else we have over here. So far we talked about the custom of spilling it beforehand. That's what we saw. So far we have two customs. One, we have the custom of spilling in the middle, which it seems like no one does, the middle of the bracha. The other is we have the custom of, the Taz just said, so when you pour it, allow it to overflow. Okay? Now, let's finish the Ramah. So we're at the last line of the Ramah. On the first page. So gam, it's like four words from the end. Gam, that's what we're reading from before. Gam, shofchin min hakos. We also pour from the cup, and now we can turn the page. I'm sorry, there's going to be a lot of page turning today. We pour from the cup, la'achar havdala. After we finish havdala, we pour from the cup, okay? Umechabin bohaner. And you extinguish the candle in that grape juice or wine, right? Is that normative? Yeah, people do that, yeah? V'rochtim bo eina mishum chibov mitzvah. Okay, and this, some people do, some people don't, but we wash our eyes with the wine as a sign of our love for the mitzvah. Okay, for those of us who are a little finicky, nah. But some people, many people do this. They'll put their right and their here and there and there in their pockets and whatever, all that kind of stuff. We'll see the sources behind this minute. Okay, and the bottom line is, the Ramah saying the reason behind it is shows how much we love the mitzvah. It's like we're swimming in the mitzvah. It's like it's so amazing. We want to connect to it. Obviously, there's something symbolic about the eyes. We'll talk about that briefly as well. Okay, so far we've heard now another time to spill. And we've seen, again, the Ramah says spill in the middle of the bracha. No one seems to do that. The Taz says spill in the beginning, before you even start. And then we have now spill at the end, and then extinguish the candle into that. Okay? Says the... Okay, fine. Bottom line is, I think that is probably the most normative halacha, normative way of doing this, that basically what people do is that they overflow in the beginning. Okay, they overflow in the beginning, and the way it's brought down is don't overflow too much. Again, and here we bring in back the Bal Tashchis issue. You know, if the whole idea is some symbolism, how much do you need for the symbol? enough that something happens, right? And you remember, you don't have to go ahead and have like wine spilling everywhere. A little video was going around the other week of like this kid, there's some kid going ahead. It wasn't like an Abdullah, like just pouring grape juice, and it was just like, you know, like a river. Okay, so whatever, we pour a little bit to remember, but it's symbolic, and there's the idea of pouring it before. Why do you still have to pour after as well? So we'll see that in a moment, right? Once you spilled once, why do you have to, what's the whole idea of drink, right? Of drinking and then pouring at the end. Why do you have to do that? Doesn't seem to make sense. If you've already accomplished the spilling, why do you pour once again at the end? But that is the norm of custom. We'll see where that comes from in a moment. We'll take some questions. Yes.
So, you know, still a lot of people use it, but the candles, some of the candles have changed. You know, like we got one as a gift. And it's one of these ones that stand on the, and you can't dip it in. You can't put it in wine.
Is it possible? Okay. So yeah. So we'll see it. I wouldn't. We'll see. We'll see if you have to worry about it or not. We'll get into it in just a moment. Yeah. We'll see if it's such a big deal.
We actually have one of those candles. What I do is I dip my finger in the wine.
Ooh.
Blow it out.
Oh.
In the wine.
Okay.
Blow out the candle, and then there's always a little spark, and then I put the spark out with the with my finger.
Interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. Interesting. Yes. Yep, that's right. So anytime we get angry at Abdullah, it's like beyond ironic. Yes. Okay, good. So I think we should also Erev Shabbos. We should have some spilling, like something like an hour before Shabbos, should do one of these symbolic acts. I think that might be more meaningful. But yeah, that's just me. Okay, fine. So let's go back to the source sheets and go a little bit further into this idea of the spilling and what were this whole process. So again, what we have over here is the minhag, which I think is somewhat normative. We spill a little bit when we pour. Okay, some don't spill at all based on this idea of Baal Tashchis. We pointed out that most reject that, saying it's not really Baal Tashchis. So the way it's brought down, and this is the way the Mishnah Berurah, which we're not going to see inside, codifies it. Pour a little extra when you fill your cup, okay? And then after Havdalah, you drink a little bit. You have to drink first, okay? Well, more than a little bit. Actually, you're supposed to drink most of the cup, okay? And drink most of the cup, and then you pour it out. We'll talk about drinking, especially I'm talking to women. You know, this whole thing, I'm sure you've heard. Yeah, okay. So I know my daughter used to say, can I drink from the cup? Yes, you can. Okay, so my house, the women drink from the cup. But we'll see. There is, we'll get into this a little bit more, women and Abdullah next week. But it is brought down in Halacha that no one other than the one making Havdalah. Do you all know? Sorry, there is this like myth that. Okay, sorry. I apologize. I'm not being so clear this morning. So yeah, there's this thing, right? That there's this. There is this statement, there's this myth that said that a woman who drinks the cup from the Abdullah will grow hair, okay? The Chazon Ish, I'll just tell you one thing very quickly. We'll just get into it now, just because, okay, I'm sorry, I already went there. The Chazon Ish was once somewhere, and they made Abdullah, and one of the kids there wanted to drink from the cup, and everyone's like, no, you can't do it. And the Chazon Ish says, you have it all wrong. He says, first of all, it's made up. Second of all, he says, if there's anything, what they misunderstood, it meant the person with the beard makes Abdullah. Okay, because we'll see, there's a whole discussion about what women's obligation is for Abdullah. So according to some, there may not be an obligation, which means you may not have, bottom line, we say Abdullah, but there is a discussion about Kiddush as opposed to Kiddush, which certainly men and women are obligated in. There is an extensive discussion about what is the obligation for, regarding Abdullah. So he says, if there is any statement, he said, there's no source, if there's any statement, maybe it was that the person with the beard, because men had beards, all, you know, whatever they like, you know, that's the one who says Havdalah, but not vice versa, okay? Bottom line, but there is something brought down that, you know, with Havdalah specifically, there's a concern, as opposed to Kiddush, when you make during the meal, or the beginning of the meal, you're supposed to drink most of the cup, okay? Now, some people, they don't right away, but over the course of the meal, they're going to drink enough grape juice or wine that hopefully it'll be okay if they don't do so. With Havdalah, there's more of a concern because Havdalah, you drink and then you go off, right? So with Havdalah, in order to ensure that the person making Havdalah drinks the whole thing, there is a minhag not to share it at all, okay? And so that might also be part of where this comes from, but that would be true for another man, a child, a boy, a girl. It's the same thing. It is brought down, okay, not everyone practices this, but that the person making Havdalah should be the only one to drink it in order to kind of impress upon that person to drink the entire thing. And therefore, there's no sharing, but it's not a gender-related thing, okay? So again, just to summarize, women. Okay, we'll get more into women and Havdalah next week. rabbinic, biblical, not, we'll talk about all that. Bottom line is that theoretically anyone can drink, man or women can drink. At least that's what we do in my house. There is a minhag that the person making havdalah should drink the whole thing in order to ensure that they do drink the requisite amount. Okay. A revius. Correct. Okay. So now what's with the spilling at the end of Havdalah? Once we spilled in the beginning, why do we spill again at the end? So says the Shul, if you look now, let's skip. Okay, I'm sorry. We're skipping around a little bit. If you go to the fourth page now. You have a fourth page? Did I not print properly? Yes. Yeah, that page. Okay. Is it upside down? I'm sorry. The upside down page. Okay. Source number two from the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. This is the Shulchan Aruch, which was written by the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. Okay, and he writes like this: Gam noagin lishpoch al shulchan min hayayin hanishar bekos. It is customary to pour from the wine that's left over in the cup on the table. Again, they didn't have like a plate; they just poured it straight on the table. Okay, achar shtias hamavdil, after the one who said Avdala drinks, umichabin bohaner, and you extinguish the candle in it. Why? Kedeshiye nir lekol, so that everyone recognizes shlo hudlak ner zeh. El mitzvah ner shel Avdalah. This candle was lit for the mitzvah of Avdalah. Livarech alav. Now, what is he talking about? Of course, why else would you light a candle? Well, he's writing this in the 19th century. Why else do you light a candle? For a trillion reasons. That's what you do, right? So nowadays, right, when do you light a candle? For Shabbos and for Avdalah, right? That's basically it. And like, I don't know, once every 15 years. Like, you know, like we don't light candles, right? So it's obvious why we're doing so. But the bottom line is that at least historically, lighting a candle was a regular occurrence. How do you demonstrate that this candle was lit for a mitzvah? In order to do so, at least retroactively, is that you extinguish the candle in the wine of Avdalah to associate, to kind of connect the two. That's his theory. Because again, once you spilled already once, you already fulfilled your basic obligation or minhag or whatever it is to go ahead and fulfill this dictum of the Gemara that we want to spill a little bit of wine. So why are we spilling at the end? So he says we spill at the end so that we could extinguish the candle. It's only spilled out so that you could extinguish the candle in it to show everyone that the candle lit is for the sake of Havdalah and not for any other purpose. Yes.
Okay, I know I'm sorry, but I always thought you spilled at the beginning and then you used the wine you spilled at the beginning to put out the candle.
Aha. Uh-huh. Okay, that would be a good way of saving some of the... Some.
You need to specifically spill twice?
That's the way it's brought down. Yeah, and the Rama as well. The Rama also wrote, so it's a spill, you know, and to your point, yeah, it would... I don't know. Like, yeah, you'd be able to fulfill what he's saying without that. I'm sorry?
It's double
baltashles. Yeah, so that's a fair point. Yeah, I don't know why they all mentioned to spill again a second time, because you're right, if there's extra wine that spilled out initially, yeah, okay. I don't know. Okay, but again, that leads to the question, like nowadays, do you really have to do so? Like even the Shulchan Aruch HaRav writes, you know, in, there are possible scenarios where it's obvious that the candle was only lit for Avdalah, right? Then you don't have to do this, right? So nowadays, there'd be a fair argument to be made, you don't have to do this. Because nowadays, it's quite obvious, the only reason you're lighting this candle is for Havdalah. Certainly if you have a whole fancy candle, whatever, but you're not lighting candles otherwise. So obviously you're doing it for Havdalah. Based on the Shulchan Aruch HaRav is open to the fact that if it's clear why you're lighting this candle, you wouldn't have to do this. But there's another reason that people want to extinguish the candle in the wine. Anyone? Any other reason? Okay, so there's this thing about
not blowing out
candles. Yeah. So let's see the source number three. There is this, it says the Kaf HaChayim. Amar Rabbi Seinu Zal, he quotes our sages, says, Al yichabe adam haner b'fiv. A person should not extinguish a candle with their mouth. In other words, they shouldn't blow out a candle. And here's strong words. Vidamo barosho. Someone who does so, damo barosho literally means like the blood is on their head. In other words, like it causes bad things to happen. Okay? Kaf HaChayim is a mystic. He's certainly influenced by Kabbalah. So he says, you know, so based on that, there'd be an additional reason, even though nowadays we all, you know, we don't light candles normally, but there'd be a value perhaps in having some alternative way of extinguishing the candle without blowing it out. You know, again, person go like this thing, you know, and extinguish it. But another way is putting it in the wine, and that would be another reason why it still might make sense to do so. Yes?
I was wondering, did this apply to just like candles for ritual purposes?
Ah. Good. So actually, the ritual purposes might actually be the opposite. Great question. Let's keep on reading. I'm going to read beyond the underline. Let's hold that for one second. But how to know again hanashim be'erav Shabbos lechabos es aneros b'fihem. So that the women have the custom of extinguishing the candle with their mouth. What is he referring to? Okay, how do you light candles? Typically, take a match, right? And then you light the candles, I guess, right? And you put it down and you let it go out, right? That's normative practice, right? Now, until you say the bracha, you know, you technically, Shabbos doesn't actually begin for you, okay? When you say the bracha, that's when Shabbos begins, okay? So what's he talking about? Well, guess what? Matches didn't exactly, weren't normative for that long, right? So typically, I imagine the way they lit their Shabbos candles was they took one candle, lit some candles, and then they had that candle. Now they could go and put the candle down, or they would blow that candle out, right? The whole match thing didn't exist, right? So clearly, at least in the Kaf HaChaim's time, the way women were lighting their Shabbos candles was they took a candle, they lit the candles, they blew out the candle that they lit with, and then they said the bracha, which would be fine. You could do that. You could theoretically put out the candle. We try not to, but just for the record, if you don't have somewhere to put that match, before you say the bracha, you're allowed to, you know, extinguish it or whatever. Shabbos doesn't start until you say the bracha. But he's saying, what's going on? They're doing it, right? They're blowing out the candles with their mouth. I just told you, you're not allowed to blow out. So what does he say? He says, how does he reconcile this? He says, Shomer mitzvah, lo yeda davara. Someone who does mitzvos, nothing bad happens to them. In other words, in the context of a mitzvah, even though you're doing something which, again, mystically might be problematic, blowing out a candle, but since you're doing it in the context of a mitzvah, it's okay. So to your point, Tikva, it's the opposite. He's saying that specifically within rituals, you would be allowed to extinguish a candle by blowing it out. Now, that should apply to Avdallah as well. And I just simply don't understand this piece because he's only addressing Friday night candle. I'm obviously missing something because it's like too obvious to even be a question. But he seems to say, for Avdallah, we don't want to blow it out. For Shabbos candles, it's okay since you're doing a mitzvah. So let's apply this to Avdallah as well. I don't know. But the bottom line is, so well, let's just pull out what we have from this piece. The bottom line is that he's telling us, and this is it's a widely practiced practice. I can't tell you it's halacha, you must do this. But a practice that you should not blow out candles. Okay, I was just speaking to a teacher, and she said she teaches in a pretty religious school. She got in big trouble. She had a birthday party in the class, and they put candles, and she blew them out, and she got reprimanded. Anyway, so... Part of the fun is to get those germs. We still do that after COVID? Does that still happen? No? Okay. Fine. Bottom line is, it certainly is widely practiced. I can't tell. It's certainly not halacha. I can't tell you if you haven't done it, I wouldn't sweat blowing it out. I blow out candles sometimes. Okay. I try not to. Sometimes I can't. There's only so much of this I can do. I'll blow out a candle. It's not, whatever. I do it more out of deference to my father, who is very strict about this. That's the truth. But yeah, it's a mystical idea. It's not brought down lehalacha. So bottom line is that one of the possible, let's just quickly summarize and bring this back to where we are. Bottom line is that there is this notion, a mystical notion, that we don't blow out candles at all. There might be some justification doing so in the context of rituals. In rituals, it's better because it's part of a mitzvah. And when we do a mitzvah, we have extra protection, general principle that's brought down in the Gemara. So maybe in the context of rituals, we're a little more strict. Bottom line is that might be an additional reason as to why we, at least ideally, try to extinguish the candle in the wine or grape juice as a way of not blowing it out with our mouth. The other reason that's brought down is to show that it's connected, that the candle lighting was connected to Avdallah, which, as we said, is there's less of a need for that nowadays. Yes?
Does that apply to the match? Well, I learned that don't blow out the match that you're lighting the candle with.
Yeah, so it'd be the same idea. It's the same idea.
There's really no mystical reason not to blow out a match, right?
Or any flame. That's understood to be any flame. That seems to be the...
Not really.
Because again, you're still lighting, right? I mean, let's say you're like, oh, I want to light a sixth candle for my, I don't know, whatever it is. Like, until you make the bracha, your Shabbos doesn't start, right? You light the first two candles, you're still lighting afterwards. So bottom line is Shabbos doesn't start until you say the bracha. So you could theoretically blow it out. Yes. Okay. So the next source you can read them. We're not going to read them together, but the next source is on that page really talk about all the different customs people put it in their pocket for Parnassa. You know, they take the wine, they put it on their eyes. So the eyes, they say, is to God to enlighten us with the Torah, and they put it in their pockets for Parnassa. And some people, I've never seen this, but put it on their back, their spine. Okay, cool. So that's for the luz bone. There's this mystical, there's this one of the pieces of the vertebrae is seen as the one thing that doesn't necessarily completely disintegrate after we die, and that's the bone through which our body gets reconstructed at the time of the resurrection of the dead. And so there's a lot about that in regards to Shabbos and the end of Shabbos, and so we put it there as well. Bottom line is, if you have the customs, poke grape juice and wine everywhere, cool. If you don't, it's certainly not mandatory, but such a custom exists. Was there a hand? Did I see it? Yes.
Okay, the Kavachim,
Yes, yes, he comments on the Shulchan Aruch. That's right. Yeah, you could get like a Kaf HaChaim, just Kaf HaChaim. Many Sfardim will have Shulchan Aruch at the top and Kaf HaChaim commentary only. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Let's now get into, we're running a little low on time, about what we're able to drink. What we're able to drink, we'll make Havdalah on. Okay. Anyone here? Okay, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but many people I've seen are not as strict. Whereas Friday night, Shabbos day, they're much more strict about making sure that Kiddush is made on grape juice or wine. I've seen many people make Havdalah normally on other beverages. Yeah. So let's see. Let's see what the halacha is. We're going to skip the Shulchan Aruch here. Let's just turn the page. We'll go to source number 7, and we'll learn it together. Okay. So source number 7 on page the bottom. It says 54. And he says like this, Gimel. This is from the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa. This is from Rav Yeshua Neuwirth, or Neuwirth. He says like this, Ein lo yayin lahavdil alav. Let's say a person does not have wine to drink for Havdalah. O shemashka achar chaviv alav min ayayin. Or there is another beverage that is preferable to the person more so than wine. Okay, so for many people, that would be the case. There would be other drinks that are more preferable. But there's a qualification. V'hu chamar medina. It is called chamar medina. Chamar medina means like the drink of the country. Okay? So what does that mean, the drink of the country? Okay, so there's an extent, essentially the basic criteria of drink of the country is that it has to be something that is normally, something that people normally drink in this region. Okay? And it's considered special, unique. So, for example, maybe not in 2022. So let's pretend we lived 20 years ago for a second. Water, although everyone's drinking water, but water, and that's normal, but water is not considered a special drink. It's what people drink, right? So we have criteria number one, people are drinking it, but in terms of it being something which is seen as chashuv, something which is special, something as a way of like really, you know, you invite your guests with, you know, that you as a way of showing like your deference and respect, water doesn't fulfill that criteria. Now, of course, today, you know, oh my gosh, water is more expensive than any other drink, right? I mean, if you get the right bottle of water, like Perrier is like what we thought was fancy water. That's like kid stuff now. You know, like there's like, I don't even know. But there's Voss and I don't know, all the good stuff. There's all this expensive water out there. So I have not seen any postgame. I've been meaning to ask some, speak to some postgame about this because it should change. It should change. Water may, it seems to me that water should be considered Chamar Medina, should fulfill that criteria. I've never seen anyone make Havdalah or consider that to be Chamar Medina, but I think a valid argument can be made on expensive water, I think. But bottom line is that's what I, forget what I said, because nobody actually holds like that. Fine. The bottom line is that says the Shmir Shabbos, yeah, there's something called Chamar Medina, which is an important drink that is normally, that people normally drink. Okay, so both those criteria. So the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says, if you don't have wine or you have a drink that you like more. So let's think of drinks that are considered important drinks, special drinks. Coffee, right? When you have a guest come to your house, what do you say? Can I get you a coffee? Can I get you a tea? Right? Those are normal things to offer. So coffee would seem to be Chamar Medina. And most poskim suggest that coffee is Chamar Medina. To go ahead and make Havdalah on a coffee would be fine. If you like coffee more than you like wine. Right? Again, that's what he's saying. He's saying, if you like wine or grape juice more, then you shouldn't do this. He says, if you don't have wine, or the other drink is more preferable to you, and it fulfills the criteria of Chamar Medina, like coffee, let's say, then you'd be allowed to do so. Oh, let's keep it running for a moment. O she'eno yachal lishtos yayin, shir kimlo lugmav. Or alternatively, you don't have the ability to drink that much wine. So, you know, based on different conditions, for some people, it's very difficult to be able to drink grape juice or wine, right? And you don't have someone there who is fulfilling the obligation with you who could drink the cup. So you're the only person, and, you know...
Whoa. Yeah. Well, we just learned that the person who
Ideally should drink. Again, the minhag is that the person should drink. It doesn't mean that they are absolutely obligated to drink. I think I mentioned there's a minhag that the person who makes Havdalah, they should be the one to drink it. If there's any extenuating circumstances of any sort, it certainly is fine. Thank you. Afilu katzen shegi lachinuch, there's no children there. Sheishtem imkomo. Ki az yavdil al chamar medina. Then you should go ahead and drink. Again, you can make Havdalah on chamar medina. Dehainu, what is chamar medina? Mashke, a liquid, a drink. Sheba oso makam, in that place. Shosim oso, they drink it. Lo machmas, shetrichim, lo laharvot hatzimaon. Not for the sake of just simply satisfying thirst. Aval shosim oso kemashke chashuv. They drink it like an important drink, bishvil kadvod asuda, for the honor of the meal, v'kavod orchim, or the honor of the guests. Fine. So bottom line is, what he's saying is that you're allowed to go ahead and make havdalah on either wine or grape juice, or if you prefer to drink a different drink, you can make havdalah on that drink, assuming it's chamer medina. Coffee qualifies. What other drinks? I don't know. Sorry, beer. Beer would qualify. Soda. So Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on soda, saying soda is not okay. He says soda is more of the refreshing type of drink. So soda, one can make an argument. I don't know, like in my house, like in theory, I don't know, the kids come and break. You know, in theory, soda is like a Shabbos drink. I don't know. You know, so one can make the arguments, but it's a cheap drink, and it's not, even though coffee theoretically could be cheaper, but there's an argument to be made that it's not considered, and this might be a dated notion. You know, soda is becoming actually less and less of a drink, but back in the day, you had the soda machines everywhere. That's how you quench your thirst. It was seen more of a thirst quencher than a respectable drink. You know, it's tricky because, you know, our standards of what is chashuv have changed dramatically. You know, the criteria for a lot of there are a number of halachas that pertain to this. The criteria is always what goes on shulchan malachim, what goes on the royalties table. And so how do you apply that to the American scene? So you say, what goes on the president's table? When you have a president who eats like burgers for like, the past two, you know, they elevated, you know, people are casual is in, right? So how do you deal with that? I haven't seen extensive, this would be a great research project if someone wants, but they're, I don't know, it's changed. Our standards have changed, you know, and therefore, do we say that, no, now that is considered chashuv because the presidents are cool with acknowledging the fact that they like burgers and fries and they don't want those fancy schmancy meals, so therefore our standards change? Or do we say that, no, even they agree that that's casual, and they're just saying, we like casual, but it's not, everyone agrees there's something which is seen as more fancy. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But the poskim reject wine. Milk is a big discussion. Reject soda. I'm sorry.
At a wedding, let's say,
I hear the arguments. I spent a little bit of time researching. It's not, there's not like so much like updated Chamradin. The last, you know, the people like really were Shlomo Zalman Orbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein, but we're talking about like 40, 50 years ago, obviously drinking, you know, so I hear you loud and clear. Yeah, Coke, Sprite. These things are normally are served at fancy things. Milk. So the postgame, I think it's Ramosha who rejects milk. He says like, who serves milk is like a regular. And I can still hear those arguments. Like if you have a guest, like, I don't know, milk's not the typical thing. No one's going to say they don't like it, but it's just like, I don't know. It's not like the drink you put out. So what he's describing is that there's all three. In other words, A, it has to fit an objective criteria. Then B, it has to fit a personal preference, right? So you need both of those pieces. Meaning, if everyone's drinking and you don't like it, no good. If you're drinking and no one else is drinking it, no good, right? So those are different things. Something like apple cider, probably sparkling apple cider does seem like, you know.
It comes in a glass.
Yeah. So like apple juice, probably not. Orange juice, many people say yes, okay? I haven't seen anyone really updating it, but those are some of the normative things which are accepted as Chamer Medina is coffee, tea, beer, orange juice. That's what I'm aware of.
Fair.
Orange juice comes in a plastic bottle, but it's expensive. Sorry, was there another question? I'm sorry.
The question was about like a liquor.
So there's two things we have to keep in mind with this. One, so scotch. So let's say whiskey, scotch. So scotch is definitely seen as Chamer Medina. That's a fancy thing, etc. The problem is measurements. I mean, there's a problem in Shabbos day as well. When people make Kiddush on scotch, you're supposed to drink a revius, which is a substantial amount. I wouldn't recommend it, right? So in other words, if you're going to go ahead and have a little sip of one shot, okay, that's fine, moderation. But like the way to do it properly would be to, yes, it certainly is Chamer Medina. Yeah, so there is a Hasidish approach. It's not, I can't say it's normative halacha, where people rely on the smaller amount of scotch, and it seems like many people have adopted this. It's certainly not brought down in the postgame that one could do so. So if you are going to make havdalah on scotch and whiskey, you should really do it on a full cup, and you should really drink a lot, which, again, I think it's a terrible idea to drink that much in one gulp. So, yeah. They have some, yeah, this is, yeah. So, yeah. another thing you have to keep in mind. So therefore, with scotch, and the Shulchan Aruch brings this down. He says, yeah, of course it's called Radina, but how are you going to drink the requisite amounts? You know, it doesn't make sense. The other thing you have to keep in mind with coffee, another issue, a similar issue, is that if it's a hot coffee, you're also supposed to ideally drink the measurements within a short amount of time. Okay? But a couple of minutes, right? So if it's a piping hot coffee, you normally take, 15 minutes to drink it. That's too long. It's supposed to be in about approximately 5 minutes. So you don't want it to be a piping hot coffee, maybe an iced coffee, something like that. That would be the way to go about it. Okay, so the bottom line is, so this halacha, I just want to point out, is not agreed upon by all. That if you like a drink, anis cham radina, then it's okay. One of the sources for this is actually a halacha that's brought down. There's a minhag that motzi Pesach, people would go and make havdalah on beer. You know the notion where people are crazy and they go and like line up for pizza for 2 hours? Okay, it's predated, right? This idea that after Pesach, when it has to have pizza, no, beer, you have to have your drink, okay? How do they get it? They didn't buy the food. They go to their neighbor and they borrow, they get a bottle of beer, whatever. It's no big deal, right? But the point is that after Pesach, that's brought down. But brought down by the Ramah. So some say, you see, and why? Because clearly you have a desire for that beer. So clearly it's okay. You know, clearly anytime that there's Chamer Medina, anytime there's a special drink, it's equivalent. If the Minag was there, that means that people were not across the board, were not making Abdullah on wine or grape juice then. And therefore, clearly it's okay. Some reject this proof and they say, no, that's only true when it's objectively the better drink, right? But when it's subjective, meaning if I were to go make a poll over here, what do you like better, a good glass of wine or a coffee? I'm not going to take a vote, but I don't know. Depends who you ask, right? Okay. Okay. So whatever, it depends. Depends on the time of day for me. But okay. But the point is that it's not that being the source for this is a little bit problematic, because after a week of Pesach, it's a fair assumption to say that, yeah, you just had 2 siddurim with a lot of wine. You probably drank a lot of wine over all the yamtiv. And now, after Pesach, just like you want a slice of pizza, you want a beer. I get it. That's objective. But to say that all the time, every time that a person wants, you know, that I as an individual like beer more than I like wine, I don't, but let's say I do, then therefore I should make Abdallah, that isn't necessarily the case. So again, to summarize, there is a debate. There are some who say that just like with Kiddush, you should always, there are some who say that you should always ideally be making Abdallah on wine or grape juice. Okay? There are those, and no matter what, even if you like beer, even if you like coffee, even if you like orange juice more, it doesn't matter. Okay, that is one opinion. Alternatively, we have this more lenient opinion who says that no, with Havdalah, if you yourself like this drink more, and it qualifies as Chamer Medina, meaning it's a drink that people are drinking, and it's considered Chashuv, important, then even if you have wine available, you'd be allowed to go ahead and make Havdalah on Chamer Medina. Okay? Questions? Yes?
Do you